and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county. From another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice, that's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads Coast to Coast. We are, Martine and I are currently in L.A., and we're over here to do a show this morning on a gentleman who's on death row. He's been on death row for about 44 years. We will dispense with doing the grapevine this morning because we wanted to deal with this particular thing. This is the first Tuesday of each month, and we come to you with a live two-hour broadcast. Normally, we come to you from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl, but this morning, we traveled all the way across the country to L.A. We were in Inglewood. And we came over to visit and to do an interview with a gentleman named James Anderson. He's been on death row for 44 years. We're going to talk with him in his case, and he'll be calling in. The problem is there's some technical issues. He's currently on death row, and he can only make a phone call every 15 minutes. So he'll come on, hang up the call and drop, then we come right back for another fresh 15 minutes. He's an interesting guy. In fact, Lewis Wolf, one of the local station board representatives, has been working on this guy's case for the last 10, 12 years. In fact, Lewis introduced us to James Anderson, and we've been on the phone conversating back and forth. And it's an interesting story. We wanted to bring this to you and give you a chance to see what's happened and also comment or call in with questions or comments. Joining us this morning will be our distinguished co-host, none other than Nikeche Taifa. Boy, she is a powerhouse. I'm so glad you have her working with us. Because usually she's all over the country. This is one of the few times that we're doing the show. We did it from New Orleans. Martha's Vineyard, we're doing it from Inglewood,
California.
We did it from all over. So we were bringing you Crossroads coast to coast, some stories about the criminal justice system and its impact on our community. And this morning's show is an interesting show. We're waiting on Brother James Anderson, who's currently on death row in California, San Quentin. They just moved it from San Quentin to the California Men's Colony. Governor Newsom issued an order to stop or put a moratorium on the death penalty, as I was told. So we have him on right now. Can we get to our first? Go ahead, Mike, how we plug him in. Good morning, James. Are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. How are you?
And how you doing, man? Thank you for calling in. I just did a little brief intro. We told everybody that you'll be calling in. You're from death row. How long have you been on death row, James Anderson?
Unfortunately, since December the 8th of 1979, I was wrongfully convicted in Riverside County, California, which is one of the most racist counties on the planet. There's been documentation and studies done about this, about the racism in Riverside County. And I've been on death row fighting my appeals ever since. The unfortunate reality is that I've had such incompetent attorneys appointed to represent my defense from the very beginning, from 1979 through my appeals. A perfect example is that the California Supreme Court appointed an attorney by the name of Alistair McAllister, whom is now no longer with us. But Mr. McAllister was an assemblyman in California for 14 years for District 25. He was a very good, close associate.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
With the former governor of California, George Duke Majan. And George Duke Majan, trying to ascend the political ladder, actually wrote the legislation that allowed the death penalty to be reinstated in California. Unfortunately, the legislature in California rejected his petition. They returned it to him. George Duke Majan handed his litigation to Alistair McAllister, who was a serious wordsmith. Alistair McAllister rewrote the legislation to have the death penalty reinstated in California. He gave it back to Duke Majan. Duke Majan resubmitted it, and it's for that reason today that we have a death penalty in California.
Okay. That's good. Let me do this, because I know our time is limited. What are you on death row for? Yeah. What crime do they accuse you of or convict you of to put you on death row?
Unfortunately, the murder of two white women. But unfortunately, the so-called witness in my case, a guy by the name of Fred Anders, he actually knew one of the witnesses, and how this was proven is that he had one of the victim's phone number in a matchbook in his pocket, which was in his wallet. And then also, as these two women were strangled, they actually found a piece of the rope in his jacket pocket. And unfortunately, it was one of those issues that they could not explain away. When they put him on the stand and asked him how the rope got into his pocket, his only response was, "I don't know." Right.
Okay.
And then we have another issue with a lying prosecutor. His name is Thomas Douglas. He has since deceased too. But Mr. Douglas put on a performance in front of the judge and the jury, and I'm going to say it verbatim. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the defense is going to try to portray my witness as being the person that actually committed these crimes. However, our office administered a polygraph test to Mr. Anders, and Mr. Anders passed the polygraph test with flying colors." Now, this is documented in court transcripts. It required 18 years for me to finally get a letter from this same prosecutor who had now advanced his political career and was now a judge. The letter is dated August the 28th of 1997, in which Mr. McAllister wrote to Thomas Douglas inquiring about where this so-called polygraph test had been administered to Fred Anders. And my attorney, McAllister, sent partial transcripts to Thomas informing him that the statement had been made to the judge and the jury. And his response in the letter was, "Yes, while I remember the Anderson case very well, and I do not doubt the accuracy of the transcripts that you provided for me, where I did make the statement to the judge Moore that a polygraph test had been administered to Mr. Anderson. No, I do not remember our office administering a polygraph test to Mr. Anderson." He went further and stated that he checked with his lead prosecutor, William Cox, and William Cox did not remember any such polygraph test being administered.
Let me cut in a minute because our time is limited. I just want to cut through a few things. You didn't have any forensic evidence, or no more than you're saying about this rope that's supposed to have been used to strangle the two victims. Has that ever been tested for DNA? Have your DNA shown up in any aspect of this case?
No.
What concrete evidence did they have against you?
None, other than the fact that I was actually at the crime scene, which I couldn't help since I was riding in his car. But other than that, there's absolutely none. No evidence that I committed these crimes at all. As a matter
of fact, fingerprints, no eyewitnesses, no forensic evidence whatsoever to tie you to this crime.
No. As a matter of fact, my girlfriend at the time, which happened to be Fred and her sister, she actually stated to the detectives and other people, jail inmates, that she knew that I did not commit these crimes, that her brother had to have committed them because she was in earshot or could see me at the crime scene at all times. So she knew I didn't do it. Unfortunately, the prosecutor and the judge got together. They allowed my co-defendant, Sheila Anders, and her brother, Fred Anders, to go into his courtroom and have a discussion. There was no transcripts, no stenographer, no one recorded the contents of that conversation. But after that meeting, the judge was not even in his own courtroom. But after that meeting, all of a sudden, I became the guilty party that committed these crimes. Up until that point, my so-called co-defendant had said that I had not committed any crimes at all.
I know. I read something where it said that you were dating one of the, the ladies, and she was white, you were black, and something about racism in terms of the Indian life that a black man was going with a white woman over in California. And you said this. You think this played an important part in your conviction?
Yes, that's the woman I was talking about. You know, the sister of the person that actually committed the crime. Her name was Sheila Anders, and she changed her testimony in the middle of the trial. Right, the judge allowed both of them to meet in his courtroom without him being present and without a court stenographer. So there's no record of their conversation. But immediately after this meeting, I became the guilty person.
So there was no hard concrete evidence, no more than the testimony of these people that got you convicted. There was no evidence, no fingerprints, no DNA, no eyewitness.
None.
Wow. Well, I think the crux of the thing was the race of the victim. I mean, this is classic with respect to death penalty and death penalty executions. Black defendants executed for the killings of white victims at far greater rates than if the defendant was white and the murder victim black. So this is classic, unfortunately.
It is.
So you've been on death row for 44 years. What chance do you have? Do you have anything pending in court? What are your chances of stopping the execution?
Oh, yes. Well, I have, one of the things that I've learned about the so-called injustice system is that when they know that what they call the lower court has made a major mistake in wrongfully convicting someone, they will literally stretch that person's appeal out and stretch out making a positive decision, a reversal, because they're actually hoping that the prisoners will die in prison, right, one way or the other. Right. So therefore, they won't have their dirty laundry exposed, that they knew that they made mistakes. Right. You know, but that's one of the aspects that I've learned about the system. They do not have a problem allowing people to just sit in jail and hope that they die so that they do not have to contend with the fact that they that there was a wrongful conviction. Mamiya is a perfect example of that. They've been trying to execute him by medical neglect for the last 10 years.
Who was that you said?
Like Mumia Bujumal.
Jamal, yes.
Mumia Jamal, and Leonard Peltier is another perfect example, right? You know, they know that the man is innocent, but they have been prolonging and denying him medical treatment for the last 5 or 6 years, knowing that the man is going to die. Right. That's the second way of
executing. Let me ask you this. What chances do you have to stop the execution? What do you have in court?
I'm in the federal district court right now. I'm actually waiting for a response from what is called a merits brief, M-E-R-I-T-S. Uh-huh. It was filed in the district court in 2015. But that gives you an example about how long they will wait to make a decision, especially a favorable decision. And my habeas was filed in the year, my federal habeas was filed in the year 2010. And here
it is. Have your habeas been responded? Have you answered your responded to your habeas?
But no, we have not received a response from my habeas to date either. Right? You know, that's one of the reasons that the merits brief.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
It's one of the reasons that the merits brief was filed in the year 2015 in a hope and effort that it would expedite a decision on my federal habeas. But again, that has not happened either.
You know, this is one of the things. I was on death row for a minute too, James, back in 64, 65 in Washington, D.C. And I know what it's like to be on that kind of punishment or penalty. And you just mentioned something that I filed. You filed a habeas. A habeas is supposed to be dealing with this. To me, a habeas is like the equivalent of a 911. If you file a habeas corpus, which means to produce the body, excuse me, that means that habeas is supposed to be responded to in a timely fashion. You filed yours in 2010. That's 14 years ago. And you still ain't got an answer. And that's the only remedy we have to get immediate or soon or quicker action on a violation in the criminal justice system. So it's taken 14 years and you haven't gotten an answer from the habeas. And you're right, they drag it on. And it's extremely frustrating on top of the sentence that they impose. So you've been waiting 14 years for a habeas corpus. And here Donald Trump just come through and he can go to court every 30, 60, 90 days, get appealed.
Yes, I'm watching that circus with Trump, you know, and he has some of the best lawyers on the planet.
Yes. So I guess what I'm getting at is that there needs to be some kind of, huh? Well, yeah, let me say this. Our guest is currently on death row, James Anderson in California, San Quentin. And he can only call at on 15-minute intervals. After 15 minutes, the call drops. So he has to hang up and call back in or have a buddy to make sure that the phone line is available for him because guys are waiting in line. So this is a delicate situation we're dealing with trying to get him back on the line. Nikeechi is an attorney. And Nikeechi, I just said something about that habeas corpus. And this brother, huh? Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you said that. Lewis Wolf is also joins. Used to be on the local station board. Good morning, Lewis Wolf.
Good morning, Roach. It's really an honor to be on with James, this man who I've known now.
You're the one who introduced us to James 4 or 5 years ago. You've been trying to get us to do a show on James.
That's right.
And you've been working on this case for how long, Lewis Wolf?
Since about 2 years after the alleged, after he was just convicted.
Was it 10 years, 12 years?
Is that Lewis Wolf from Covert Action?
That's him. That's him.
Hey, my brother, how you doing? It's Nikeechi.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were working on this case. All right. Oh, yeah. You long distance runner.
I've been for about the last 30 years, yes.
Wow. Yeah.
So you've been knowing him over 30 years, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's your take on it?
I have visited James now in San Quentin.
All right, Lewis. James, have you back on. We're talking to Lewis and Lewis Wolf. James, hold tight a minute, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come on.
I have visited James at San Quentin probably 7 or 8 times in his, not in his cell, but in the visiting area, and he always inspires me. He has not wavered 1 inch from his commitment to his innocence, and I am convinced, absolutely convinced, because I have researched the case back and forward, and he always inspires me. In fact, he teaches me every time we speak on the phone. He'll say, "Have you checked this website?" I said, "James, how in the hell do you have? I know you don't have access to a computer. How do you know about websites and so forth?" And he does not allow himself to be depressed or anything like that.
Let me cut in, Lewis. What convinced you of his innocence? Wow, you've been working with this case for the past 30 years, and he's been on death row. What is it about him or his case that made you be committed to working with him for the last 20, 30 years?
Well, I never met Alistair McAllister, but I know what kind of man he was. And he did not interview any eyewitness that would have proven James's innocence. There was a case of the murderer himself, Fred Anders, had a different shoe size from James. And at the crime scene was a sandy area off the highway in California where the women were strangled. And
James' shoe size was... This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Totally different. And so he... McAllister never checked the website, checked the sand, anything. He did not do what he should have done to defend James whatsoever.
Okay.
Wow. So
hey, James, we got you back on. Are you with us, James Anderson?
Yes, I am. I'm listening to Lewis Wolf, and I should mention, too, that Lewis Wolf actually hired a private investigator for me. Her name was Sheila O'Donnell. She's since passed. But she was able to obtain some documents related to Alistair McAllister, which basically reflected that he was a racist and that he was a grossly incompetent attorney, right? Mm-hmm. Lewis is, yes, right, there's no question about it. And I should also mention, too, that I, as a result of having poor legal representation, I was trying to get these attorneys to include bits and pieces of information that would have exonerated me, hopefully, and they would not include this information in petitions that they would draft, so I ended up having to draft and submit what's called an errata motion in the year 2010, which basically it's for correcting the record, right? And I included 35 pages of exhibits where Alistair McAllister had included false information in the petitions that he submitted to the court, one of which, and this is an important factor, is that I was actually driving the car on the day that the murders took place, when the person that was actually on the car and was driving it, Fred Anders, said during the preliminary hearing in every police report that he was driving his own car, that I was a passenger in the car. But according to Alistair McAllister, I was actually driving the car. And unfortunately, the Federal Public Defender's Office has not made any effort to correct the record in that aspect, which is one of the reasons that I drafted this errata motion and submitted it to the California Supreme Court myself, because these attorneys would not include relevant information that would have proved my innocence.
You know, I'm listening to you talk, and I'm hearing key words or phrases that you use. You're telling me that you've been working in the law library, and you're very knowledgeable about the law. And because you come through a situation like this, you have to get on top of it yourself. So you're very enlightened and informed on what the legal issues are about your case. Question, do you think you got a chance of beating this case? Are you coming off of death row?
And the thing is, it will be receiving justice as opposed to beating the case, right? You know, there's a difference, right? And the courts do pay attention to the language. There's Sixth Amendment constitutional rights that I was denied, and they cannot deny that, which was that we did not have the opportunity to cross-examine a so-called witness, and it wasn't that they actually put the witness on the stand, but what they did is, in order to get a testimony, they interviewed the psychiatrist, psychologist, and a probation officer that had interviewed Sheila Anders. But this is after she changed her version of the testimony. But what the prosecution did is put the psychiatrist on the stand and questioned them about the contents of the conversations between my so-called co-defendant, right? But that's still a Sixth Amendment violation, because I was not given due process to cross-examine a person that was accusing me of a crime.
Right. So Mr. Anderson, can I ask a question?
We're going to teach you.
If you are successful in this, will this just result in you being released from death row, or will it result in the overturning of the conviction?
Well, it would be an overturning of the conviction, and then the way that they do it these days, they've been been doing it for years, is that they will try to come and offer me a deal. They will say, well, if you plead guilty, and they'll maybe drop it down to a lesser charge, a second degree murder, if you plead guilty, we'll let you go, right? You know, with no strings, but you cannot sue the state for wrongful convictions. That's how they do it, right? They make sure that you don't expose their dirty laundry, police corruption, lying prosecutors, because they have their what they call their legacy at stake, right? You know, they want to leave the plant. Like this guy, Thomas Douglas, died about maybe 8 years ago. But as far as the public is concerned, he was a just judge and a righteous prosecutor and all that. But then if this case is exposed the way I'd like to expose it, it's going to show that none of that is true. So they are always protecting their own interests at all costs.
Well, let me say this.
Pawns in the game.
We got people listening to you all over the world on this particular show. What is it that you can say to folk to say that that you can get some support or help or relief? Because like I said, I was on death row for about 90 days in D.C., man, and I know that the feeling of that having, knowing that you're waiting to die and they come in to kill you. What is it that that people listening can do or help or get to learn more about your situation if they want to get involved? What would you suggest?
Okay, well, you know, I've been told that there is a list of attorneys that have either been placed on probation or that they were suspended from practicing law or some other issue, but they are very competent attorneys. There are some of these attorneys that they actually were fighting a just fight, and that's why they were suspended, right? And so if I would love to get an attorney that is a serious fighter, right? In other words, when it comes down to the death penalty, you need to put a pit bull, not a poodle, as far as attorneys are concerned.
You're right, but that's what you need. Right. You need 10 pit bulls. You know, one ain't enough.
Yeah, exactly, right? You know, and as a matter of fact, excuse me?
Go ahead.
I was asking, what can we do as lay people to support you getting this attorney who can fight for you correctly?
Well, you know, I'm currently looking for, there's a list here in California of attorneys that are available that would do pro bono work. And I'm in the process of going to an organization called Critical Resistance looking for such an attorney. And the attorney doesn't have to be here in California. He could be anywhere, right? And he could, once he has an opportunity to review the facts of the case, the petitions that have been filed to date, then he can contact me and we can make arrangements for him to be appointed to represent my appeal.
He or she.
Okay. Do you have anything in court right now that can help get you some relief? What do you have pending in court now?
Well, as I said, my federal habeas is still in the courts waiting for a decision, which was filed in 2010. And then there's the merits brief that was filed in the year 2015. And we're waiting for a decision on that. And merits brief is pretty much exactly what it says. It details the merits of the case, right, which we'll talk about the constitutional violations, the state violations, lying prosecutors. As a matter of fact, I just talked to one of my attorneys last week, and there is a publication called the Prison Legal News, and they actually have an entire book about prosecutor misconduct. And I asked my attorney, "Do you have a copy of this book in your arsenal?" And he said that he did. Right, you know. So I'm trying to do as much due diligence as I can.
You're touching all the bases. In fact, we had the editor from Prison Legal News, Paul Wright, on a couple of times. Go ahead, Nikichi.
Yeah. So real quick, this would not result in the overturning of the conviction, but one of the demands or the requests we're making of the Biden administration and whatever administration follows the Biden administration is that clemency be granted to all those who are currently on death row, okay, mm-hmm. so that they would not be on death row anymore, that there'd be clemency. So you would fall within that rubric and could continue to fight. If they, we are successful in that, you could continue to fight your legal claims to get the entire conviction overturned to be released from prison.
This is WPFW. Wait a minute, hold tight. Yeah, this is WPFW 89.3 FM on your dial. This is Crossroads, and we're talking to James Anderson, a guy on death row currently right now over in California. He was in San Quentin, and he moved to the California Men's Colony. James has been on death row for 44 years, so we're bringing the show to you, our special two-hour show. We do the first Tuesday of each month. We do 2 hours, and the first hour is with our friend James Anderson this morning, talking about he's on death row, been there for 44 years, and we wanted to bring his case and shed some light on it. Okay, go ahead, James.
Okay, there's also, I'd like to give a shout out to the Bayview, San Francisco Bayview newspaper. They have been very instrumental in exposing a lot of injustices of the injustice system. They actually published two articles that I've written over the last few years. One of them was dated September the 26th of 2021. The second one was published October the 2nd of 2022. And more recently, I just submitted another article, which is going to be published this month. And the title of that article is SNYs, SPIs, and Other Beasts of CMC East. That will be published in the September issue of the San Francisco Bayview. Their website is sfbayview.com. The editor is Mary Radcliffe. And okay. Speaking of which, San Louis Francisco Wolf, if he's still Bayview. On the run.
Okay.
So I have another question. You might have covered this before because I was a little distracted at the beginning of the program, but what was the makeup of your jury?
All white. I'm glad you. Thank you for asking that question. Of course, my jury was all white, and you could look at the expression.
And that
on
was
their
a couple of years after the Batson versus Kentucky case. McCleskey.
Yes.
Wait a minute. When was McCleskey? McCleskey was 87. Well, you were convicted in 1980, then, right?
No, 1979.
So McCleskey. Oh my God, you have been in a long time. Okay, that's a Seminole Supreme Court. Go on.
Go ahead.
Actually 45 years, right? But yes, they brought me to death row on December the 8th of 1979.
Wow. Been there ever since.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We talked last week, James, and you mentioned that they shut down death row on San Quentin. You're no longer housed at San Quentin. Where are you and why did they move you? And what happened to death row?
Oh, wait, say it again.
You were originally housed at San Quentin's death row. I understand they closed down death row in San Quentin and moved you out. You're in the California Men's Colony now. So what happened to those men like you who have death sentences? Are you still on the death sentence or do you have a date? Or do you have a date to execute you? Hello? Okay, you got to call back. Nikija, this is an interesting story. He's been on it for 44 years. And I'm glad you raised the question that the jury was all white. He was in a white or racist part.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court has not been friendly on these cases at all. So in 1987, there was this case called McCleskey.
I remember that.
Yeah, right. And even though it was proven that there was racial discrimination with respect to his case, the Supreme Court basically said, okay, that might be true, but we're not going to give relief to McCleskey. He's going to be executed anyway, because the Supreme Court basically said the racism was so pervasive that they could not do the right thing in all cases. So they weren't going to do the right thing in this case. I mean, it was just absolutely obnoxious decision. And then in 77, the case of Batson versus Kentucky, Supreme Court ruled that prosecutors could not use race as a factor in eliminating potential jurors from the jury pool. So that's another reason why I asked him what was the makeup of the jury, because I'm wondering whether Blacks were eliminated unjustly from his jury pool, resulting in an all-white jury.
Okay.
James, when he just now, before he had to leave the call, mm-hmm. I hope he'll call back, he was talking about the expressions
he's
on the faces of the jurors. I wish he could finish that point.
He's back. He's on, Ken. Did you hear him, James?
Yes, I did. Right. As a matter of fact, thank you very much, Lewis. I appreciate that. But by the way, too, I thought the listening public would want to know that Lewis Wolf is in the possession of perhaps 25 or 30 T-shirts that were manufactured that have the names of victims that were killed by police. Anybody can contact Lewis Wolf about obtaining a T-shirt, and it's an interesting project.
James,
it's one of the projects that I've done.
He's an artist.
It's one of the projects that I've done to inform the public about just how rampant police killings of Black people is in this country, and it has the names of thousands of people that have been killed by the police on their T-shirts. And speaking of which, there's an article in Lewis's magazine, Covert Action Magazine. The date of it is November the 9th of 2023, which is an article that I wrote about the conditions and mentality of death row. It's an interesting article, at least I think it is. And, of course, this article that I just finished on July the 4th of this year, SNYs, SPIs, and other beasts of CMC East is a reflection of my observations since I've been here.
Let me ask you this. How close have you came? Have you ever been close to being executed? How close have you come? Have a date ever been set in your case?
No. Fortunately, I've never had a date for an execution date. There's been a number of people that have, that I know, but I have never been close to having an execution date. And, you know, for the obvious reasons, right? You know, they keep holding off making a decision in my petitions.
Do you have a date now? Are you currently, have a date now to be executed?
No, I do not. And besides that, Gavin Newsom has a moratorium on executions in the state of California. So basically, legally, no one can be executed in the state of California until governor leaves the office and somebody else comes in and reinstates or eliminates the moratorium.
So you're hanging in limbo then. We don't know which way the wind will blow.
Right, exactly. There's
a moratorium, and it transfers. And I asked you the other day, are you still under? I know when I call and check on people's criminal case, and they got their expected release date on your slip. They got your release date is death, so you're still under death sentence, even though they're not going to carry it out unless another governor come in and reimpose or eliminate the moratorium. So that's a funny position to be in, man.
Yes, it is. I have watched very intelligent people come to San Quentin's death row and literally lose their minds within 6 or 7 years, right? Not to mention the suicides. I've probably known about 10 guys that have unfortunately committed suicide, one of them, which is a guy by the name of Danny Jenkins. He was from Los Angeles. He had just committed suicide 2 days before I was transferred from San Quentin to CMC. Mm-hmm. So, it can wear on a person's psyche. There's no question about that.
So how do you spend time? I know you've been doing a lot of, you're an artist, you're a writer, you've been using dominoes and doing all kinds of creative things with them. How have you been able to survive without committing suicide?
Well, you know, the thing is number one, proving my innocence, right? You know, that is a force that, I mean, it's something I have to do. Lewis Wolf, Bruce Gagnon, Katie Herr, I have real friends that believe in me, right? You know, and they inspire me, right? I mean, I have to prove my innocence, not just for myself, but for them as well, because they have invested thousands of dollars in me. They have invested thousands of hours in me. So I have to do this, you know, and then it's just, it's a principle. I'm a man of principle, at least I like to think I am, and it's the principle, right? You know, and I'm not, if it's any consolation, I know I'm not the only one. Anybody can read the prison legal news and look at other journals out there, and they can see how wrongful convictions are just a common thing, right?
Yes, it's
part of the system, and it's why they call it the injustice system.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay, you know, we got a call, I believe. Do we have a call or somebody wanted to call in and ask you a question or comment? Do we have anybody, Mike? No, we don't. I thought we had two callers
this
on.
This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
So is there a way that all of your articles...
He's gone. His call stopped every 15 minutes. His call drops. We got to wait till he comes back on. We have any calls on the line, Mike?
No, he's there. He's back.
Okay, come on. Go ahead, Murray.
My question is, can all of James's articles support it? We can read everything and support everything. How we can do that?
Well, yes, there's a website that's based in... Okay.
Go ahead.
And I'll say it slowly. www.saveinnocence.com/anderson.html. There are a number of documents, paintings, etched dominoes, records, court records there that reflect my innocence. And I'm working on getting some of my other writings. I've written a number of different articles for various publications, and I'm trying to get all of them on that website.
Wonderful. Yeah, we'll put that out to the public so people can support, read, because numbers can make a difference when people knowing all the details and everybody hollering and speaking all over.
You know, you said Governor Newsom issued a moratorium on the death penalty to stop the executions in California. But what does that do in regards to, will your sentence be converted to life without parole?
You know,
are you still on the death sentence? And how long would this carry on? Because you're in limbo. You don't know if they're going to execute you or you can get a life sentence.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to avoid, you know, getting that alternative, because the life sentence is just another death sentence, right? You know, he was
slow,
right?
Death by incarceration.
Matter of fact, they actually call it the second death sentence. But
this call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
Before I forget, too, there's a San Francisco radio station, which is KPOO.com, which is another organization that I suggest that the public support in any way that they can. The manager there is a brother by the name of Jerome Parsons, JJ. He's the station manager. And I actually donated one of my paintings to that station back in the mid-80s. The founder of the station, his name is Joe Rudolph. He died in 2021, but he was a serious advocate for me. He wrote letters to the judges about my innocence and about the programs that I was doing at San Quentin. And so I suggest that everybody try to visit KPOO.com. They actually have a program that airs every Thursday at 11 o'clock a.m., and it's called Prison Nation. And it's hosted by a sister by the name of Newbie Brown, and they talk about prison-related issues, right? KPOO is a community-supported radio station. I just had to give them a plug because they've been phenomenal when it comes down to exposing the ills of the prison industrial complex.
You know, our time is running out. We have a few minutes left. What kind of support have you gotten from your family? Do you have any kids, or do you have any sons and daughters while you're, and if so, have they been coming to see you? Yes. How's your family been supporting you, or are you getting support from your family?
Yes. Well, yeah, I have a brother and a sister remaining. Unfortunately, the majority of my relatives have passed away since I've been in prison. Uncles and nieces and nephews. My niece, just Shannon, she's only 42 years old, but she just had a heart attack, right? But yes, my brother and sister, we're in constant contact. I have an estranged son, Anthony, and, you know, that's another story. But and then there's a possibility that I have a daughter, and I've been trying to get these attorneys to do investigative work to find out exactly where she's at. But, you know, there's only so much that you can do. I've actually written to the Office of Vital Statistics trying to find her, but her name is Dawn, right? So I'm doing everything I can in here to make those
Our time is running out, James. All we have is a few minutes. You want to close out, man, but whatever you want to say to our listening audience, whatever is on your heart, you want to share, you got a few minutes before our show ends. Go ahead, you have it.
Yes, well, I very much appreciate the support of my very best friend and advocate, Lewis Wolf, Bruce Gagnon. He's a phenomenal guy. He has a newsletter called Space Alert, which is about nuclear proliferation. I would like people to support him as much as he can, as much as they can. The same goes for Covert Action Magazine. And then again, there's your station, Crossroads. I'm sure that people can make financial donations to make sure that this program stays on the air and exposes the ills of the system.
Thank you.
Can I ask him a real, real quick question, Roach, just real quick?
Go ahead.
Mentioned critical resistance. Have you reached out to the Innocence Project?
Yes, unfortunately, yes, I did, right, the one in San Diego, but since there was no DNA in my case, there was nothing they could do with it. Unfortunately, you know, there's no DNA, so that was it. But yes, I did. I reached out to the one in San Diego and the one in San Francisco, but they all both said the same thing. There's no DNA evidence to be evaluated, so there was nothing they could do.
You know, you mentioned earlier that rope that was supposed to use to strangle the two ladies, they still have the rope, and the rope has never had DNA performed on it. And you think that the DNA on that rope might help free you or point to the person who made this happen or the perpetrator?
Yeah, well, there's no question about it. I mean, they actually found this length of rope, and I'm going to say it was 3 feet, give or take, in the guy Fred Anders' jacket pocket, right? And they did a forensic matchup to a long length of rope that was found on the second victim, and they discovered that the piece of rope found in Fred Anders' jacket pocket matched and was cut from the long length of rope that was found on the second victim. So, you know, when they asked him, we put him on the stand, and, you know, how did that piece of rope get in your pocket? I don't know.
Let me say this, our time is running out. You got a minute or two for closing remarks. We will be inviting James Anderson back in the very immediate future to stay on top of his case. In these 2 minutes, what do you have to say to our listening audience, man? What is yours? The mic is yours. Say whatever you need to say, man.
Okay, I appreciate your time, your energy.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
And I would very much appreciate your supporting Crossroads. Any way you can.
Okay, thank you. We'll be in touch. Our guest has been James Anderson. He's on death row, been there for 44 years over in California. And we've had as a miscarriage of justice in this case as we've been able to ascertain. So we'll stay in touch and keep you informed and invite James back. Nikichi, thank you for joining us. And James, thank you. Lewis Wolf, we want to thank all of y'all. This has been the first time we had a live phone interview with somebody from death row here on Crossroads. This is our first Tuesday of every month. This is the first hour of our two-hour show. We will be coming back to you shortly with another hour about a young man called the Walter Lomax Act. He had a law passed as a result of him being erroneously convicted for 39 years. And he just been home for a few years and got a law passed. So we're bringing you folks who are on the front line making things happen. And we wish all the best to our good friend, James Anderson, who is on death row in California. We wish you luck. And if anything we can do here at Crossroads, we'd be glad to be of assistance. Until the next hour, stay tuned for the second hour of Crossroads. This is Roach Brown, Mertine, and Nikichi. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Back when I had a little, I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated, but a lot was a little too complicated. See, zero didn't satisfy me. A million didn't make me happy. That's when I learned the lesson that it's all about your perceptions. Hey, are you a papa or a superstar? So you act, so you feel, so you are. It ain't about the size of your car. It's about the size of the faith in your heart. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. Off in the back country of Brazil, I met a young brother that made me feel that, I could accomplish anything. You see, just like me, he wanted to sing. He had no windows and no doors. He lived a simple life and was extremely poor. On top of all of that, he had no eyesight. But that didn't keep him from seeing the light. He said, us are like in the USA. And all I did was complain. Living here is paradise. He taught me paradise is in your mind. You know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. Every time I turn on the TV, there's hope. Somebody's acting crazy, there's hope. If you let it, it'll drive you crazy, there's hope. But I'm taking back my power today, there's hope. Gas prices, they just keep on rising, there's hope. The government, they keep on lying. We gotta keep on surviving, keep living our truth and do the best we can do, cause there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. Smile, you don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. Hey, yeah. Stand up for your
stand up for your
keep shining,
keep shining,
and show the world is
strong.
Stand up for your
stand up for your
keep shining,
keep shining,
and show the world
your strong.
Smile, you don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that.
Better thank God for that.
There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly five decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways you can contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need. Running or not, it can do wonders for WPFW. So donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hey, it's that time again. Join WPFW as we move to get fit at the annual 5K run walk for total fitness. Dynamic fitness instructors will be there, free healthy snacks and water, exciting music, boat rides for families, and a double dutch contest and a hand dance contest are all included in the 5K fundraiser. This event takes place at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, September 14th. Now, for more details and how to register, visit our website, wpfw.org, or call 202-888-5484. That's 202-888-5484. Meet you at the park on Saturday, September 14th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. WPFW, making a better world, one broadcast at a time.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, Washington.
School is back. Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Words, Beats, and Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy.
All right, all right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
Hi, this is Robin Holden, the proprietor of Robin's Place. Every Friday evening from 7 until 10 p.m., Robin's Place is a mythical entertainment center consisting of four floors. On each floor of Robin's Place, we have rooms that are named after people who I think are icons in music, theater, and literature. We have the Nancy Wilson Room, the Joe Williams Room, the Gloria Lynn Room, the Frank Sinatra Room, the B.B. King Blues Room, the James Baldwin Library, just to name a few. Join me Friday nights from 7 until 10 p.m. as I take you on a musical journey you'll never forget. Robin's Place.
Come the day you're mine, I'm gonna teach it.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes!
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of D.C. communities east of the river on To the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture.
On the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
Right here on WPFW 89.3.